In another 7-2 decision, the Supreme Court today struck down the murder conviction of an African-American man who has been on death row for more than 2 decades. The court found that in trials against the man, nearly all African-Americans had been struck from the juries. And those actions were motivated, quote, in substantial part by discriminatory intent. Slate's Dahlia Lithwick joins us now. She hosts the podcast Amicus. Hi, Dahlia.
Hey, Jeremy.
So this death row inmate, Curtis Flowers, has been tried 6 different times for the same crime. First of all, just remind us of the details of this case.
Sure. This is actually the subject of the award-winning In the Dark podcast, so a lot of folks know this case inside out. Curtis Flowers was African-American, charged with executing 4 people in a furniture store in Winona, Mississippi in 1996. 3 of the 4 victims in the case were white. And in his first 4 trials held between 1997 and 2007, the same prosecutor, District Attorney Doug Evans, a white man, used every one of his 36 peremptory challenges to get rid of black potential jurors. Peremptory challenges are the ones, they're not for cause. They can just be because the prosecutor doesn't like a juror. But in 1986 case, Batson says you cannot use peremptories to strike folks just based on race. So of all those trials, 3 ended in convictions but were reversed. 1 ended in a mistrial. Finally, in the 6th trial in 2010, Evans accepted 1 black juror, struck everybody else, finally got his conviction. And the question for the Supreme Court today was, just looking at that trial, was this huge pattern of striking all the black jurors, basically except for 1, unconstitutional?
Mm-hmm. And what did the court's ruling today mean for Curtis Flowers?
Well, for Curtis Flowers, Brett Kavanaugh writes for 7 justices. There's 2 dissenters, and he looks at the entirety of the case and says, look, quote, the state's relentless, determined effort to get rid of black individuals on the jury suggests that the state wanted to try him before a jury with as few black jurors as possible. They basically kick it back to the state, and now the state has to make a decision about whether to try Curtis Flowers for a 7th time. We'll know about that fairly soon.
So what is the larger impact of this decision?
Well, there's not a massive impact beyond the facts of this very egregious case, but I think it does put some teeth in that Batson ruling from 1986. It does essentially say that the Supreme Court takes very, very seriously this pattern of repeated dismissal of jury, so much so that it's egregious.
As we said, it was a 7-2 decision. Who were the 2 dissenters and what did they say?
Neil Gorsuch and Clarence Thomas dissented, and Thomas wrote a pretty blistering dissent saying the court never should have taken the case and that the majority had, quote, second-guessed the factual findings of 2 different courts, and went on to say, by the way, that the media attention had really corrupted the decision, too, and the court should be very wary of that.
Have you been surprised this term about the number of cases where it's come down not a 5-4 decision but something like what we saw today, 7-2?
There's been a whole raft of them, and even this week, Jeremy, there's been a whole bunch of them that have really scrambled the kind of conventional wisdom that this is a 5-4 court that is going to align that way. I think in many, many ways the court is really being careful about its reputation, particularly going into an election year. And we're seeing some really interesting alliances, 6-3, 7-2, that we may not have expected.
Now, the court is going to wrap up next week. There are probably 3 more days left, right, of decisions with 4 each day. Is that your sense?
That's right. Okay. That's right. 12 left.
Now, what happened, I believe it was exactly a year ago, right around now, is that they finished the term and then Justice Kennedy announced in a surprise that he was retiring. Do you expect any retirements this year?
I don't really. I think there's been a lot of whispering in Washington that Clarence Thomas is in play, Jeremy, largely because he's been writing some really, really big ticket dissents in cases. He seems to be signaling something, but I'm not of the view that he's going anytime soon.
And what do you make of the new court right now with Justice Kavanaugh and Justice Gorsuch on the court?
Well, I think the most interesting pattern is that the 2 Trump justices have actually not been aligned the way we might have expected. expected. They've not been in lockstep. And they actually have lower agreement rates, at least thus far, than we might have expected. Some of those 6372s that you're describing has either Gorsuch or Kavanaugh hiving off and voting with the liberal wing of the court. So I think that we'll know much more next week. The big ticket cases are next week. But I think it's fair to say that they are trying very, very hard to disabuse the public of the idea that they are raised in an underground lab to do Donald Trump's willing.
Right. So what are you looking out for next week as we await the remaining decisions of the court?
The two biggies that everyone's watching are, one, the challenge to the Trump administration's decision to add this citizenship question to the 2020 census, and that's the one that will really have massive impacts if the court blesses it. The other is a case you and I talked about this time last year, these gerrymandering cases, these political gerrymanders from Virginia and Maryland and North Carolina. The court essentially has to make a decision which they have not been inclined to make, which is, are we going to go ahead and find a constitutional standard by which a political gerrymander is not okay? They've been avoiding it forever. Those cases are coming up.
That is Dahlia Lithwick of Slate, who hosts the podcast Amicus. Dahlia, thanks so much as always.
Thanks for having me.